Chapter 1. Terra, the Imperial Palace. We fell and we burned. Not just one, but all. These are the ashes we are left. The splinters of broken glass left of the window through which we watched humanity die. This is not our world. But they are not strong enough. Why? What was his plan? A crumbling ruin, a cruel joke. The blood in the veins is weak. But it is blood, and it will bleed. It needs to bleed to cleanse the infection. Purgation, pain. Nothing is achieved without sacrifice. Was that his plan all along? The Senatorum Imperialis had long been a circus in the eyes of Grand Master Vangarich, but of late its habit of convening meetings in different locations had turned it into a travelling show. Security, his fellow High Lords had insisted. With an orc attack moon still lurking within striking distance, albeit silenced and blockaded for the moment, it was unwise to meet in the same location on successive occasions. He was unsure how it was more secure or morale-boosting to meet beneath the cracked dome of the Anisidoran Chapel, once such a proud statement of imperial faith and power, when the chapel's mosaics and friezes bore the scars from the attack moon's arrival. Most of the elaborate decorum of the High Lord's conclaves had been gradually stripped away by each episode in the growing tragedy enveloping Terra and the Segmentum Solar. Gone were the hordes of retainers, the pomp of the Lucifer Blacks in escort, the self-important clarions and gaily coloured banners. The entourage of clerks, administrators, vox and vid data cordists, factotums and counsellors was much diminished, replaced in part by two companies of Lucifer Blacks in combat gear rather than ceremonial uniforms. It made the large echoing space of the chapel's nave seem even grander, even emptier without the attendant background noise of teeming functionaries that had used to fill it with their tapping, scribbling and murmuring. The Imperial Palace, the whole sprawling edifice, seemed overly grandiose. At least, Vangarich felt it so. The parade grounds built for legions stood empty. Halls dedicated to the assembly of thousands in audience lay dusty and unused. Vast wings had been erected to house the armies of administrators that had been spawned over the last millennia, while the immensity of the past was allowed to remain standing idle, each vacant shell a hollow claim to a power that had long departed. The High Lords seemed small and frail, surrounded by the vastness of the chapel, as if it represented the scale of the threat they faced. In a palace built for demigods, they seemed more insignificant than ever. Vangarich moved in the shadows beyond the central meeting, only half listening to the back and forth of bickering and politics. He measured each man and woman at the table, recalling plans long in motion, schemes that had been devised over many years, lest the need arise. He knew exactly how each would die, if necessary. That was his role, though none subjected to his scrutiny would care to admit as much. Take Mesring, for example. The Ecclesiarch thought himself safe, having uncovered and possibly countered the toxin Vangarich had introduced into his system. It might be a bluff. Might be that the seed of Mesring's destruction still tainted the blood in his veins, but it mattered nothing to the Grand Master if it was not. His agents had poisoned the head of the Imperial Church once, and they could do it again. Next time, it would not be for leverage. It would be quick-acting and lethal. Then Lansung, the Lord High Admiral, saviour and failure in one body. Vangarich often tempted himself with the idea that his own hand would deliver the blow here. Of them all, Lansung's megalomania and vainglory had caused the most damage. But it was not the Grand Master's position to strike the fatal blow. Not always. He was the hand that held the dagger, not the blade itself. In passing, he caught the eye of his operative amongst the minions hovering close to the High Lords. It was remarkable how so lethal an individual, one so possessed of physical strength and dexterity, could masquerade his puissance beneath the plain green cowl and cape of an administratum adept. his size and power hidden as easily as the mono stiletto he carried. The weapon was fashioned from gene-modified bone, as hard as steel. Organic matter, invisible to any Auspex currently known to the minds of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Esad Wire, the Beast, Vangrich's right hand during the unfolding catastrophe. The Beast did not react to the brief glance of his master, his attention fixed on the proceedings of the High Lords, features hidden in the darkness beneath his cowl. And there was Kubik, Fabricator General, head of the Cult Mechanicus. Today he was present only in hololithic representation. Perhaps he feared to attend in person after the revelations of previous gatherings. The Adeptus Mechanicus's long-standing relationship with the Imperium of Terra had been fractious of late. Agendas had clashed, information had been hoarded, loyalties had been called into question. Vangrich looked at the static-flecked image of the Martian overlord and wondered whether recent protestations of renewed dedication to the Imperial cause were simply more lies. In a show of cooperation, Kubik had shared, under duress, the findings regarding the Orc teleporter technology and the location of Ulanor, the world from which this threat seemed to have sprung. The Grand Master had plans and agents in place within the Adeptus Mechanicus on both Terra and Mars to extract what further information was being hidden and, if ultimate sanction was required, to strike at Kubik himself. The only other individuals of importance were missing. Veritas and Venand, the joint inquisitorial representatives, had not made any communication since Corlin's return from his mission, and whether by choice or from the ongoing machinations of the Inquisition was not clear. It irritated Vangrich that he was unsure of their current whereabouts, but as he had found, sometimes it was best not to worry too much. Much as with his own organization, when the Inquisition could be seen at work was when it was too late. An approaching thunder silenced the discussion, and all eyes turned to the great doors of the chapel. The Lucifer Blacks parted swiftly as a handful of commanders from the Adeptus Astartes entered, their armored boots striking deafening drumbeats across the broken tiles. They were a few individuals, but each was the avatar of a martial power deemed so strong it had been divided, their might judged too much for a single hand to wield. And now that edict was being reversed, and might yet prove a greater threat than the Orcs. Space Marines. Each dwarfed the chapel's occupants. Just the seven present were capable of killing everyone within, including the Lucifer Blacks. Except Vangrich, of course. At any given heartbeat, he knew precisely which of the four escape routes he might use should the Adeptus Astartes decide that pandering to the pride and ambition of these mortals was too much effort. Captain Valifor of the Blood Angels, Wolflord Asger of the Space Wolves, Chapter Master Odenathus of the Ultramarines, and Grand Master Sakael of the Dark Angels, both newly arrived on Terra, fresh come from battles in the darkest reaches of the galaxy. Their chapters bore the names of the greatest legions from the Heresy War, and carried that distinction well. With them came High Marshal Beaumont of the Black Templars, and Chapter Master Cassandra of the Crimson Fists. Both had earned glory in the battles against the Orcs thus far, each creating a legacy worthy of Rogal Dorn, from whom their gene seed had been created. Others were continuing the fight in the Sol system and beyond. And with these Lords of the Space Marines arrived the last of Dorn's sons, the remaining survivor of the Imperial Fists, Captain, Chapter Master, and lately, Lord Commander Corland, who had resumed the use of his wall name, Slaughter. His ochre plate had recently been repaired and repainted, but the injury of war and loss was born in his eyes. Dark, distant, they looked upon the High Lords as though surveying pieces of furniture, a necessary but uninteresting feature of the environment. And then came Vulcan. And suddenly the mighty halls, kilometers-long processionals, and cavernous chapel did not seem so large after all. The Primarch filled the huge space, and not just with his gigantic physique. The raw presence of the Emperor's warlord was like a force that swept all before it. A few of the High Lords stood up on reflex, some bowed, and all but Vangrich averted their gaze, however briefly. His armor, plate worthy of a demigod and forged by his own hand, was burnished dark green and gold. In one fist he bore a hammer the size of a Lucifer Black, and many times more deadly. His skin was ebon, as dark as a starless night, save for two eyes that glittered like rubies. They found Vangorich immediately, despite his attempts at being inconspicuous, effortlessly identifying and locating the greatest potential threat in the chapel. He flinched at their silent interrogation, his unfettered reaction providing the answer they sought. A hint of a smile creased the Primarch's lips for half a heartbeat. A challenge, almost. He knew. Vulcan knew Vangorich had a plan to kill even a Primarch. The Grand Master had to. It was the inevitable logic of his position. Duty compelled him to consider such a terrible scenario. Vulcan's eyes moved on, releasing Vangorich from their burning intensity, the Primarch's expression sour as he took in the surroundings and the holy nature of their decoration. The giant turned his gaze back to the others. However, his next words were directed towards the Master of Assassins. "Grand Master Vangorich, what is our purpose in going to Ulanor?"
"You ask me because I am the assassin, Lord Primarch, which gives us our answer,"
the Grand Master replied smoothly, moving into the light, drawn forth like venom from a bite.
"To slay the great beast. We know that orcs follow the strongest leader. Take that away and they will fall on each other in the resulting power vacuum. The invasion will splinter and die. For all their barbaric strength, they are vulnerable to a classic decapitation strike. Had we known that Ulanor was the source, I would have directed efforts thus," protested Lansung.
He wilted a little as Vulcan's unforgiving gaze moved to him, but retained enough composure to redirect the Primarch's ire.
"Had the Fabricator General not withheld such intelligence, we might have ended this sooner."
Even across the medium of the hololithic transmitter, Kubik looked unsettled. Vulcan said nothing, but moved to one end of the debating table as his commanders spread to either side. Vangorich tried not to think of it as an encircling manoeuvre, but he quickly reassessed his options and concluded that only two escape routes remained.
"The full weight of Mars is being directed to support the assault of the Lord Primarch,"
Kubik's voice buzzed from a voxcaster placed in front of his hazy image,
"as swiftly as it can be mustered. Dominus Gerg Zokov is one of our best and most experienced commanders from the Tagmata."
"One of your best," said Vulcan.
"The best," Kubik quickly answered. "His logistaria and strategic engrams date back to the Heresy War and earlier."
"The ships are ready," Vulcan demanded of Lansung.
The Lord High Admiral nodded without comment.
"I have put out the call for the Fratris to assemble. Thousands of followers are ready to embark as soon..."
Mesring trailed off in the face of Vulcan's unflinching stare.
"That will not be necessary, Ecclesiarch."
The Primarch's distaste for Mesring's position made the title sound like a curse.
"Your brand of zealotry will not serve our cause."
Vangorich was so busy enjoying Mesring's utter despondency that he almost missed a small reaction from Beaumont. The High Marshal glanced sideways at the Primarch and then fixed his gaze on a point on the ground for several heartbeats. Nobody else seemed to notice, and Vangorich wondered what could prompt such a guilt reflex. Tobris Eckarth, Master of the Administratum, cleared his throat. His eyes momentarily flicked from one High Lord to the next, seeking reassurance and receiving little, until they rested again on the sheath of translucent data sheets in his quivering hands. He swallowed hard.
"I, that is my organization,"
he sniffed, gripped his reports tighter, and started again. The words burst forth in a breathless stream.
"This whole process is without mandate or proper protocols, and it is not in compliance with at least 72% of the Senatorium Imperialis Code, not least being the exclusion of required officials to make proper record and deliver due notification on the deliberations and ramifications of gatherings at which the Imperial policy and the application of military resource of greater than regiment strength or equivalent thereof has been debated."
"I am quite sure that half of those words were not in the correct order," said Odenathus. "Are you objecting to something?"
"This war," Eckarth blurted, is illegal, without proper authority, of uncertain integrity.
The next word was uttered with such contempt that it made Vangarich wince.
Unauthorized!
You mentioned compliance, said Vulcan, folding his arms. That word can mean many things. In one respect, it is something with which I am more familiar than any other in this chamber.
I don't understand, confessed Eckarth, looking to his companion High Lords for support or guidance.
Vangarich laughed gently, and he felt their scrutiny and their antipathy. The master of the Administratum glared at him.
What is so funny? Eckarth demanded.
You seek compliance, my dear Tobris.
Vangarich looked across to Vulcan.
Worlds brought into the Imperial truth during the Great Crusade were compliant. The Lord Primarch has several thousand space marines poised at his command, in orbit, and on the surface of Terra. It is we that need to consider the nature of compliance.
Silence followed for several seconds. Vulcan did not gainsay Vangarich's assertion.
Good, the Primarch nodded. We are of one mind. Let us turn our efforts to Ulanor and the matter at hand. Now, the war truly begins.